Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. I know virtually nothing about computers other than I use the internet and sometimes buy books, outdoor gear, and medicine using the web. I also do research, looking up things that interest me or that I need to know for this radio show. I'm surprised and a bit annoyed when I get ads immediately after buying or researching something, or simply checking on news on a specific subject. Our Constitution gives us the right of privacy, yet it seems someone is monitoring my communication. Are they? Adrian Cohey knows. Adrian, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
I grew up in Helena. My father currently works at Diamond Products, manufacturing cleaning products. My mother is recently retired from D.A. Davidson Companies, where she was a financial consultant. Previously, she had worked as chief of staff under Governor Schwenden.
Looking back on your early life and growing up in that family, what key values stuck with you?
Integrity, honesty, the willingness to do hard work, and the willingness to learn.
Now, did they model that for you?
Yes, they did model that for me.
Okay. And those qualities, I think most people would regard as admirable. Have they played out for you, let's say, in your academic career, in your work career? Have they proved relevant?
They certainly have proven relevant. I would say that earlier in my academic life, through middle school and high school, I didn't apply myself as much as I would have liked. I got good grades in high school, but I think what really matters is what we do in college. The barometer for good academics, in my opinion, isn't good grades. It's whether you're genuinely interested in the subject that you're working on.
You just said you got good grades but didn't apply yourself fully in high school. What was that dynamic? The emphasis on this, I understand what getting good grades is. Why weren't you motivated to apply yourself fully in high school?
Well, in high school I was, kind of scattered, as a lot of folks are. They're doing many different activities. I was involved in orchestra, speech and debate. We try a lot of things, but not everything that we try sticks.
All right.
Debate didn't stick for me, and English literature didn't stick for me, but I loved math and I loved orchestra.
I should tell our listeners that I've known you since your childhood, and I'm surprised to hear you say debate didn't stick for you, because I remember you talking very articulately with my son and other friends over a wide range of issues. Now, you work in computers. Where did that interest arise?
That interest came from a very early age. I would say about 3 or 4. I was playing with old computers that we had given to us by other family members, and I was playing computer games on them from a young age, doing basic programming things like displaying text on a screen and doing conditional things like if you answer yes or no to something, something else would show up.
What years are we talking about when you're growing up?
We're talking about the mid-90s, so 93, okay. 94, 95.
So you start with that why is that you could have that experience and go on to working on cars? What held you?
What held me, I think, was the engagement with gaming. I was never an athletic person, and so it gave me something to be good at that wasn't something that everybody else appreciated, but it gave me a way to have a sense of belonging. I was involved in a lot of online communities for gaming and found competitive scenes there. I never really made it, in the sense that, I'm not currently part of a corporate team that plays in South Korea on television, but I learned a little bit about competitive spirit and integrity and sportsmanship.
Now, as an old guy who's watched my son and other young people spend many, 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 many hours in video games, the words you use surprise me, because I'm pre-computer. When you talk about participation in competitive activity, I think of sports, okay? I'm hearing you say that in gaming, there is competition. You said a sense of community. Help me understand it.
Well, the sense of community comes from a center of shared experience. You know, as I said, a lot of the people who do that aren't, you know, as adept in other areas. They weren't the people who went out for football and track and were very successful in high school. You know, those were people who might have been social outcasts and came together upon common interests and empathy in those terms.
So what's in the game that, in other words, to me a game could be a game of checkers, and you're not going to develop, I would just say, roughly speaking, a sense of camaraderie. You might get some competitiveness in checkers, but this sounds like a community develops around these games, and I want to understand why in human terms.
Well, in human terms, the best example I would say includes massively multiplayer online games.
All right, massively multiplayer online games. Let me just see if I understand the terms. A lot of people, they're online, and it's a game of some sort, but let's start with the game. What's the game?
So one game is World of Warcraft. So that's probably the most famous example of this game, and it's sort of a medieval historical fantasy game where you can play a character that is maybe a soldier who fights with a sword, or a wizard who is capable of casting powerful spells, or a healer. And so you can get involved in groups of people. They were called guilds, in keeping with the medieval theme. And they would go do things like fight dragons and try to obtain powerful artifacts. And they would do what's called leveling their characters together, which is basically they would all be improving one another's power level and experience and ability to affect the world.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Adrian Kohi about computers, and we will be talking about computer security. I am surprised as an observer, not a participant, in what you're saying, because what I think I'm hearing is, in the process of these team games, relationships are developed, personal identity outside one's normal life has some element of reality that is meaningful to the participant. Am I missing the point?
No, that's exactly the point, I would say.
Now, when did you start playing these? How old were you?
Online gaming, I would say I was in my early teenage years.
Okay, how old are you now?
Now I'm 26.
Okay, do you still game?
I do game on occasion, but much less than I do studying now.
Okay, we'll get to that. That suggests to me that what you experienced has had value over time. Fair?
That is fair, and I would say it has.
It's one thing to have value for somebody that's 16. It's another to have value when you're 23. It's a different period. And one of the things that struck me about watching people play video games, what I would call interactive role-playing video games, is it goes on. It lasts over time. What's the pull? I say that with some skepticism because I'm thinking, and I've asked my son, what are you learning that you didn't know the last time? You follow me? I'm skeptical, and maybe my generation is skeptical. What can you tell us?
What it provides is a safe space for people to explore their own identities. Not being as adept in athletics or conventional social skills, sometimes you need an alternative space in which to develop those skills. And through online gaming, you know, you can get a sense of social boundaries, a sense of integrity, honesty, and cooperation, and that can carry on into other parts of life. And so I think that gaming does have value despite people's skepticism around it.
Is it a fair deduction that in your case it has had that impact? The impact I'm talking about is the last sentence. carried on into other aspects of your life.
Yes. For one thing, computer gaming has gotten me interested in computer science generally. That was what motivated my going into computer science in college. And it was something that I excelled at and I believe is a lifetime interest for me.
I hate to repeatedly reveal my ignorance on this show, but what is computer science as you define it?
Computer science, as I define it, involves writing programs for people to use. And these are things like your browser that you use to look up things on the internet, things like Internet Explorer, Firefox, Opera, Safari, whatever you happen to use to browse online.
When you say writing it, did you say writing it up?
Writing programs.
Writing programs.
As in specifying the instructions for what needs to happen on the computer in order to make a movie play, to make a song play over your earbuds.
Okay, so let me just see if I get this. So I know this sounds pretty primitive. But if I try to make an analogy, you're designing the mechanism in the computer that may, when I push a button or punch in some buttons, it works like when I shift the transmission on my car, it starts to move. Is that fair?
It is fair. Computers are just generalized physical devices that are able to perform computations. And as they perform computations in certain ways, we're able to cause interesting things to happen that don't just look scientific and mathematical. You know, they look like things like beautiful images on your screen as you're looking at art, things like that.
So, your gaming led you to interest in computer science. Where did that interest take you?
That interest took me into database design. It took me into web development, and it took me into information security, ultimately.
Okay, web development. Try to just give me that in a few words. What does that mean?
Web development means building web pages that people can use to submit information. Things like submitting their health claims, filing their tax returns, getting on Facebook, and keeping in touch with their friends.
You said after web design, computer security. What is that about?
Computer security is about any time you're submitting information, that information could be altered. That would be a violation of integrity. The information could be disclosed to unauthorized third parties. That would be a confidentiality concern. Or maybe the website's down and you're not able to process a health insurance claim or file a health insurance claim. Okay. That would be an availability concern. Those three things, confidentiality, integrity, and availability, are the things that we're trying to protect in computer security.
That covers a lot of ground. Let me go back to my introduction. Sometimes I look for camping gear and I end up getting inundated with ads from different companies. Or I want to check the latest news from Cuba, where I've been a few times doing radio work, and suddenly I'm inundated with ads about how to travel to Cuba. It annoys me because I'm assuming someone is looking at my communications without my permission and sending me a commercial message. Do I have it right?
Yeah, you do have it right. So various websites do this, and they end up employing other services for this, like Google syndication or Amazon. But basically, companies are sometimes tracking you and sending information about what you're searching for on their websites to a centralized source so that they can send you targeted advertising.
Okay, so let me just assume a couple of things and see if I'm wrong. They do it because they're making money from it. They're selling my name to a commercial provider who's advertising to me. A, fair?
That is fair.
B, I'm assuming they're not breaking the law, that in my somehow some contract I automatically signed by using Google or whatever I'm using, I'm giving permission without knowing I'm giving permission.
Correct. That's a big issue. These are called end-user license agreements.
Okay.
And there are things that you have to sign or you have to say accept that I've read, and very few people have read them.
Yes, and I'm a lawyer actually, and I've never read them. And I check the box, I accept the conditions, because if I don't accept the conditions, I can't do the research, right?
Correct. That's a trade-off that we have to decide to make. So a lot of us have made trade-offs where we've given our personal information to many, many corporations. I've given my personal information to Google, Facebook, Amazon, and I'm sure others.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Adrian Kohi about computer security. Okay, someone might say, Brian, you signed up, you checked the box. In fact, you didn't read it, is your problem. What are you complaining about? Should I be complaining? Should I be concerned?
Well, the answer, I think, is more complicated than a yes or no. I would say no, in the sense that a lot of the time the information that you're giving to Google and Amazon and Facebook are not the kinds of information that people would need to commit real identity theft. But it is also kind of a problem in the sense that if any of those companies suffer a data breach, say, of your password information, a lot of people reuse their passwords across multiple websites.
Right, because I can't remember if I don't use the same password. Now, you said data breach. You said if a company suffers data breach, does that mean somebody hacks into their files?
It could mean that someone hacked into their files, or it could mean that an employee was tricked over the phone via social engineering to reveal information that they should not have revealed.
You said identity theft. So someone potentially accesses some medical information of mine that I filed to get a claim or something, or buy medicine. What happens in the real world when people get their identity stolen on computers? What's the range of things that happen?
Well, you can have the range of people using your credit card to purchase items and send them to different addresses, you know, to their addresses
instead of
yours, and you get stuck with the bill. But you know, under the Fair Credit Reporting Act and other laws, you have remedies. You know, you're able to work with credit agencies, and you're able to work with your credit card company to deal with the problem.
Well, just let me jump in there. My understanding is it can be a hassle. It can take a lot of time, aggravation. It can temporarily affect my credit rating. In other words, it's not just pie-in-the-sky solution. Fair?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you might not even know that this has happened to you until you hear from a collection agency, which can be a very scary experience.
Okay, there's a hypothetical risk. How big a problem is it in the real world of the United States?
There are about 15 million victims of identity theft every year.
And 15 million? That's one out of 20 Americans, approximately. Then more than that in terms of adults.
Mm-hmm.
One out of 10, let's say.
And the losses incurred from that go into the $50 billion range.
Billion, as in B?
Yes.
So recognizing the risk, what can individuals or companies do to protect themselves?
On the individual side, what you need to do is monitor your credit every year. I would also say monitor your medical records every year.
How do you monitor your medical records?
You can request a credit report from one of the three major credit bureaus.
But my medical records?
Your medical records, you would want to work with your provider to obtain those. And the reason that it's important to obtain those is not just that someone could have stolen your identity and used that to get care or prescriptions in your name, but also that as a result of that care, inaccurate information might now be appearing in your medical record.
Let me just ask you this. I go to a St. Pete's hospital here, and every time you go in, they ask you to identify yourself. They ask you to review your medications. And I'm thinking, I was here 2 weeks ago. This must be related. This must be some sort of validation technique in terms of avoiding medical fraud.
The best way to avoid medical fraud, and some hospitals are moving towards this, is either biometric identification, like a palm print scan.
I should have said, they take a palm print. They want to make sure it's me. So that, I'm just speculating, is related to the potential of medical fraud. Yes. It's in my lifetime as a 68-year-old guy, it's pretty new. I'm used to walking in and say, hi, I'm Brian. They say, great, you'll have your doctor to be seen in a minute. Now they do this fingerprint or handprint. So that's a consequence.
Yes, that's a direct consequence of this type of fraud.
Now, is this the field you work in now, computer security, or other areas of computer science?
No, currently I work in the software development area of computer science.
All right,
I work for the state.
You work for the state. How have you developed the knowledge that we're discussing now, computer security? How and why?
I've developed it through study, and I've also developed it through investigating responses to issues that we face at the state.
The state, in other words, is also concerned about what I'll call hacking, computer security.
Yes.
How would you compare the two, computer science, software, whatever language you used, and the issue of computer security in terms of interest to you?
Computer security is a higher interest to me than software development. With software development, you can provide all kinds of helpful services that people need, you know, like ability to file their tax returns or health insurance claims. But with computer security, you're protecting not just the information of your own organization, but you're actually protecting real people against compromises elsewhere.
Why does that matter to you?
I want my information to be protected, and I want to be able to protect my neighbors. It goes back to what I learned from a young age about integrity, honesty, and willingness to do hard work. In the end, it's all about community. We want to be protected, so we should want to protect other people. That is my motivation.
In terms of protecting the community, let's step it up a level to the national interest. As a layman, I read in the newspaper over a period of years, Chinese alleged hacking into American military systems, American hacking into the Iranian nuclear power system. When I read things like that, I'm thinking, holy smokes, if this is real, and I'm not capable of judging it, we're talking about interference with systems fundamental to national security of one country or another. And it would seem to me, from a lawyer's standpoint, if you're interfering with someone's military defense system, for example, we're talking about potentially acts of war. What do you know about this?
Well, that's a very interesting question. As far as acts of war, I do agree with you that those types of activities represent an act of war. What's difficult sometimes is having attribution. And by attribution, I mean the ability to be able to affirmatively claim with high confidence, yes, this nation state was behind the attack. For example, when Sony was compromised, it took quite a while to be able to say that North Korea was behind the attack. Another example includes Stuxnet, and that was malicious software that was used to compromise Iranian nuclear research facilities and destroy some of their centrifuges. It's interesting because it's thought to be, though not officially pegged as, an American and Israeli joint effort in cyber warfare.
Okay, I remember hearing that. So that was, in layman's language, an effort to sabotage another country's nuclear research and or development.
Correct.
Okay. Now, I'm sitting here thinking, if someone was trying to hack into our computer system that controls the launch of nuclear weapons, A, that's deadly serious business, and B, it is an act of war. Do you know anything about, what's the talk? Is this a serious activity engaged in by different governments in the world, like the arms race was to develop a better nuclear weapon before the other guy did? What's going on out there?
There is a lot of concern around that, yes. There is something of an arms race. There is also a defense race as well. And so for Congress's part, they're trying to discuss what the best kinds of response would be. And the responses right now are looking a little bit disproportionate. Unfortunately, I don't remember this person's name, but they were on a panel basically asking the question, if a foreign country were to hack into some of our bigger corporate systems, would we be in the right to shut down their entire financial sector in response? I believe, this is just my professional opinion, but also my opinion as a citizen, that that's a disproportionate response.
Okay, that gets into the area of public policy, and if we go back through, let's say, the history of the nuclear arms race, we could have a long discussion in another show about who did what, when, and what the consequences were. But I'm hearing you say it is a real issue. In this case, at the corporate level, is it a real issue in terms of military systems? Since military systems are to some degree computerized, like transportation systems, air flight routes, and all that sort of stuff, it sounds to me like this is a real serious business, and that there ought to be people employed who know what the heck they're doing to provide defense mechanisms against this sort of malicious interference. Fair?
Absolutely.
Is it an industry? Is it a growing profession? What would you say?
It is a growing profession. It's got high demand. It's not just getting better software developers and making sure that they don't write programs with common vulnerabilities that people can use to hack into their systems. There are also full-time positions now in what are called security operations centers, or SOCs. And those are basically people who are full-time on the wire. They're looking at all the network traffic that's coming in. They're looking for attacks in real time, and they're escalating those to the help desk or the security team in order to best respond to those.
It would occur to me that there's a fork in the road. The traditional response is every nation looks after itself. The alternative is people say, you know what, we got a common problem here. There's some serious, dangerous people out there. We better work together. Any sense of what's going on?
There is an international effort. There have been instances of drug trade and even human trafficking going on, and countries have banded together all across Europe through Interpol and the United States as well, through federal agencies like the FBI and the DHS, to shut those websites down.
Going back to what you said earlier about why this matters to you, is it out of line to think of Adrian Cohey in 5 or 10 years working in computer security?
Not unreasonable at all. I look forward to bringing my development experience to computer security and information assurance in the future.
Adrian Cohey, I very much regret to say we're out of time. It's been a special pleasure to have you on the home ground. To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.